Money in, money out.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. We're getting a glimpse of the broader economy right now as markets started trading just 20 minutes ago. And we asked the question, where's Wall Street? Down right now, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ both down about 0.5%, the Dow down about 0.2%. European markets lower across the board right now, mainly under 1% for London, Frankfurt, and for Paris, and Asian markets closed mixed today as well. The dollar today hit its lowest level against other major currencies since the Lehman Brothers collapse last year to its lowest level, and oil's trading back around $71 a barrel after rising sharply yesterday. We found out this morning the personal spending nudged higher in June, higher than even analysts were expecting. And on top of that, we also learned incomes dropped, incomes by the biggest margin in 4.5 years. We're going to check in now with Julie Nieman. She's an analyst at Smith Moore & Company and joining us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So how are people going to be able to keep spending and helping get the economy going if incomes keep going down?
Well, consumers really aren't going back to their old spendthrift ways at all. Consumer spending was up about 0.5%, Wall Street cheered, but it was all due to buying food and gas, and that rose due to inflation. Consumers are still buying only when they need to replace things. Bottom line, the equation is still no jobs, no income, no real spending.
Julie, hang on just a second, because some of the nation's most powerful financial regulators are on Capitol Hill today. They're testifying right now about some of the new regulatory reform proposals being pushed by the White House and Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson is with us live from our bureau in New York to talk about what they're talking about on the Hill. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Steve.
So explain the showdown happening at this hearing on Capitol Hill.
Well, you know, the Obama administration is trying to put together this huge financial overhaul, which would basically consolidate a couple of banking regulators and also give more power to the Fed. Now, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, brought in all these regulators last week and said to them, "You've got to get behind this plan now and stop trying to protect your turf." Well, it has not been an impolite morning on Capitol Hill, but various regulators are saying they have problems with various parts of this plan. Here is a taste of it from FDIC Chair Sheila Bair.
I don't think this is going to solve what the problems that led into this crisis. And I think you have other models in European countries that have a single regulator. And I think you can look to the performance, and the performance was not particularly good.
All right. Julie Nieman, we just heard from Sheila Bair as someone who's watched the banking industry for a long time. Do these upset regulators have a case?
Not really. Tim the Toolman brought out the hammer and tongs because the system has failed miserably. The financial industry is doing its very best to convince that all you need is a little tweaking so they can go back to their profitable business as usual. Now, the agencies all have overlap, they're antiquated, gaps in oversight, and these multiple institutions make the regulators have real problems with audits and inspections. They cost the industry. We do need heavy-duty reform and coordination.
Jeremy, is anything expected to really change after today's hearing in Washington?
Well, the Obama administration and Tim the Tool Man, as Julie said, want to get things done as soon as possible by the end of the year. The chairman of the Senate Banking Committee and the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee are on board with that timetable. And the reason, Steve, is the farther we get away from the financial crisis, the harder it's going to be to get reform through.
That's right. Top of mind, right? Jeremy Hobson. And Julie, any final thoughts?
Well, the agencies want a regulatory council, so there's not one person who sets implementation, shared authority. And once again, then there's nobody to blame when the system fails. There's a bureaucrat.
All right. Julie Nieman joining us this morning from St. Louis. Julie, thank you.
You bet.
All right. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson from our bureau in New York this morning. Jeremy, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The Obama administration wants to do a little public shaming today. Target the mortgage industry to try and put a tourniquet on a sky-high foreclosure rate. The White House has published names of mortgage companies lagging behind the government's plan to ease the housing crisis. Officials hope some public outrage will kick in. When the president's plan launched in March, he said he wanted to help millions of homeowners modify their mortgages. As of last week, though, fewer than 15% were on track to get a loan modification. You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, August 4th, 2009 at Marketplace.org. More bank earnings reports out of Europe this morning. Switzerland's largest bank, UBS, is posting a higher-than-expected loss of more than $1.3 billion for its second quarter. Christopher Worth has more from London.
UBS has paid a price for trying to get its house in order. It spent over $2 billion restructuring and cutting loose overseas operations in Brazil. But that's only half the story. The bank has been embroiled in a dispute with the United States over releasing financial information on wealthy American clients who might be hiding money from Uncle Sam. Jan Randolph is with IHS Global Insight. He explains why worried clients have pulled over $37 billion from its wealth and asset management divisions.
Why take the unnecessary risk if you know that UBS is under the spotlight? You will park your money somewhere else, under the radar, as it were. And there are other smaller banks in Switzerland that may be safer for them.
One bank that may be benefiting is the not-so-small Credit Suisse. It's posted profits of nearly $1.5 billion. But troubles at UBS may be easing. A deal with U.S. authorities was announced last Friday. Details are due later this week. In London, this is Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Germany's government held talks today with the two final bidders for GM's European operations, also known as Opel. Europe is a huge car market, but as Jill Barchet reports, post-bankruptcy GM doesn't see much growth potential there.
GM sees its future in Asia, South America, and the Middle East, but not Europe. Craig Fitzgerald is an automotive analyst at Plant & Moran. He says GM's decision to turn its back on Europe is a tough one.
What they are doing is de-emphasizing Europe, so they've got the capital available to support what they think are the stronger growth markets.
But Fitzgerald says GM isn't giving up on Opel or Europe altogether. It'll retain a stake in the German company.
They will try to maintain their hold on Europe while not committing significant capital to their European operations.
GM wants to pick a buyer that will agree to the closest business alliance to do things like buy parts together and share designs and technologies. The German government's throwing money into the deal too, but it has different priorities. It wants guaranteed employment for German workers. I'm Jill Barchet from Marketplace.
If you're a bit confused about what overhauling the nation's healthcare system might mean for you, it's unlikely things are set to get any clearer now that Congress is heading out of town on its summer recess. As Marketplace's Steve Henn reports, a healthcare advertising war has already begun, and not everyone is playing fair.
Evan Tracy tracks political advertising for the Campaign Media Analysis Group. He says the healthcare debate is quickly becoming an advertising free-for-all.
We're at $50 million plus being spent on television ads so far. You've got dozens of different players.
Their messages are all over the map. Tracy says this cacophony favors the bill's opponents.
Because it lends itself to a much more emotional, demagoguing message.
Targeted ads on hot-button issues like this.
They won't pay for my surgery, but we're forced to pay for abortions.
Brooks Jackson at factcheck.org calls that ad misleading. He says several others attacking the overhaul are simply false.
We're now seeing opponents basically twist and distort things that aren't in any legislation.
But with the details of the healthcare overhaul still being hammered out, Tracy says the public's confusion about the plan makes it easy to attack. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
During the peak of the housing boom, glossy home magazines like Dwell celebrated the rise of modern prefab architecture. These factory-built homes with clean lines and green materials promised to reshape the building industry. That is, until the housing market crashed. But that doesn't mean green prefab is dead. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sam Eaton.
Architect Leo Marmo realized his dream in this sprawling warehouse south of downtown Los Angeles to build modern prefab homes on a factory assembly line.
The steel frames themselves were put together outside on those large jigs and then literally slid into the factory to roll down this track assembly on the factory floor.
Marmo says the manufacturing process reduced construction waste by as much as 40%. And as green building began to catch on, business was looking up. Then,
when the credit market fell to pieces, the prefab market went with it.
Today, most of this 65,000-square-foot warehouse sits empty, but Marmol remains optimistic.
There's always been this utopian dream of trying to make better design more available to our communities.
Meaning more affordable. But Los Angeles Times architecture critic Christopher Hawthorne says Marmol's factory was missing a key ingredient to achieving that affordability: scale.
The prefab designs are probably more progressive in terms of sustainability than they are in terms of economics.
But some companies are adapting. Boston's Blue Homes has thrived despite the recession. It has about 50 homes currently in its pipeline and a merger with another company in the works. Co-founder Maura McCarthy says Blue Homes' success is simple.
We didn't start, you know, trying to be the Armani of homes.
They did set out to become the IKEA of homes, offering modern green design at affordable prices.
You know, you can't have clients putting them together as much, but you can definitely have them designing them and having more influence on how to put the elements of the home together.
McCarthy says Blue Homes prefab houses cost as little as $135 a square foot. That's about half the price of Leo Marmol's models. And with energy bill savings of up to 60% compared to other houses, McCarthy says the recession isn't killing prefab. It's finally making it cost competitive. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
CEO of Goldman Sachs is apparently telling employees to avoid making high-profile purchases. The New York Post this morning says the executive doesn't want the employees to look like they're living high on the hog. The bank's faced a lot of unwanted publicity lately, including a story in Rolling Stone accusing Goldman of having a key role in all sorts of market bubbles stretching back to the 1920s. Pepsi Cola made a high-profile purchase today. The company's buying its two largest bottlers, Pepsi Bottling Group and Pepsi Americas, for near $8 billion in cash and stock. The soft drink giant probably put out a press release, something others can access, say, on Facebook or in limited form on Twitter. Corporate culture is changing, and those socializing sites are doing a lot of selling, too. Here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith.
As companies slash advertising budgets and staff, they're beefing up their presence in another area.
Twitter, Facebook, Flickr, YouTube, Delicious, Scribd, Upcoming.
Scott Monty is the multimedia communications manager for Ford Motor Company. He manages Ford's presence on social networking sites. He says this is a whole different way for companies and customers to communicate.
People would say, hey, Ford, I love your new music video, or, you know, whatever they say, because it's totally candid. And I would be on the Ford Twitter account, and I would answer them back. And they would be flabbergasted that Ford Motor Company is listening in on what they're saying about Ford Motor Company.
Sites like Facebook and Twitter can also act as a cheap and super fast focus group. Paula Berg heads up emerging media for Southwest Airlines. She says when Southwest ran color ads on their printout tickets, people started complaining on Twitter. They didn't like the ads using up their pricey colored ink.
So we got that information, sent it to our CEO, sent it to our marketing folks, and within 24 hours, those ads were black and white. We didn't have to have a focus group about it. We just saw it and took action.
Industry analyst Laura DeDeo says social networking sites are changing the way companies communicate.
It forces you to think. It forces you to be edgy and say what you need to say in a very short space of time. And I think that is a byword of doing business today.
DeDeo says the recession is pushing companies to get creative, and social networking can be a great and inexpensive way to develop brand presence and a relationship with customers. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Finally, Walmart likes to say it's all about low prices, but one blogger mom from Ohio says the company stooped to a new low. Advertising Age says the woman is angry because the retailer is testing cookies for its in-house Great Value brand. The treats are very similar to Girl Scout Thin Mints and Tagalongs. The woman, who's known as the Cookie Mom for her daughter's Girl Scout troop, says it's the exclusivity of cookies that helps them sell. No comment from Walmart and no word on whether the Scouts are planning, in retaliation, to sell cheap DVDs, automotive supplies, or outdoor furniture. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday. Have a great day.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.